Well, hello and welcome back to the Archaeology News Weekly. I am, of course, your host, David Connolly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. As ever, the stories have been collected from various sources, so to view details on this story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. Now, let's start with a bit of hysterical misreporting with the gay cavemen. Who is not gay and is not a caveman? Anyway, why let that get in the way of a good story? And there's something more serious, as the earliest human record keeping in Europe has been discovered in Greece. Then, Archaeolink Prehistory Park in Scotland. Can it be saved? Then we head over to South America with details and dates from 12,000-year-old textiles. A Wiltshire museum gets funds for a new Bronze Age gallery, and scientists in New York trace the violent death of an Iron Age man. Getting trippy now as the earliest evidence for magic mushrooms appears in Europe, and 4 dolmen sites are discovered in central India. There's a new study shedding light on East Asia's Stone Age tool scarcity, and there's a 7,500-year-old settlement being unearthed right now in Germany. While over in New Mexico, we have the remnants of a nomadic society being uncovered. Back to Britain, the causes of the Bronze Age recession. This shows that nothing really changes there. Now, back to our favourite cousins with the question, did the Neanderthals disappear by chance? Ancient human remains are found in Iowa, and rising seas made China's ancient mariners. Finally, we talk about the Welsh rock art and their unique find in Anglesey, courtesy of Past Horizons there. And remember, of course, you could be listening to all of this on the Stone Page Archaeo News app, as well as keeping up with the news as it happens. And of course, before this goes any further, I would like to do a little special podcast mention to... Yes, Jeff Dobson, you know who you are and your lovely partner. So just for you two, I'll say it nicely and welcome and hello from Bonnie Scotland. Right, well, we won't do that again. Anyway, let's start off the real podcast with the gay caveman. Claims of discovering a gay caveman might well be quite exaggerated. Excavations on the outskirts of Prague in the Czech Republic have uncovered skeletons dating back 2,500 to 2,800 BCE. The skeleton in question is a male of the Corded-ware culture, who were very particular about their burial rites. Their males were usually buried on their right-hand side, the head facing east. This skeleton, however, was buried on its left-hand side, facing west, which is the female position. The head archaeologist of the Czech Archaeological Society kicked off a debate when she said that they found one very specific grave of a man lying in position of a woman, without gender-specific grave goods near the jewellery or weapons, and they thought that he was perhaps from a third gender. The publishing of this assertion has led to a strong response, though, the first being a riposte on the title caveman, which John Hawkes, paleoanthropologist at the University of Wisconsin, states is totally inaccurate, as Corded-ware people were in fact Bronze Age or just pre-Bronze Age farmers. The argument against the gay label has been equally vehemently challenged, with questions over the uniqueness or vice versa of the find, and the assumption that the remains are even of a male. Even if it were proved to be a male, the assumption of third gender is equally questioned by Rosemary Joyce from the University of California, specialising in sex and gender archaeology, who suggests that a third gender burial would have been unique and not just a reversal of male-female position. The whole argument for and against can be summed up in a statement made by Monty Dobson, an archaeologist working at Drury University in Missouri, when he says that this might be much ado about nothing, or it might be something that tells us something very interesting. There simply isn't enough data right now to make the statement definitive. Well, I guess that says it all. It might be, or maybe it's not, but I can tell you one thing. It's definitely not a caveman. Right, to Greece. What is thought to be the earliest European example of clay tablet writing has been found. The tablet fragment, measuring 2.5 centimetres by 4 centimetres, and that's small, is believed to date from 1,500 BCE and was excavated from an olive grove in the village of Ecliana in southwest Greece. But the area would have been Mycenaean at the time the tablet was written. Tablets were usually just dried in the sun and so remained brittle. It's thought that this fragment was preserved because it was being discarded and burnt in a fire, thus hardening. The symbols used in the tablet are from a writing system known as Linear B, which is a very ancient form of Greek, being replaced by ancient Greek alphabet some 400 to 600 years later. The Mycenaeans used Linear B to record items of economic interest. The tablet bears out this theory, as the front face reverts to manufacturing and the reverse possibly lists properties. The tablet was found by Michel Cosmopoulos, Professor of Greek Studies and Anthropology at the University of Missouri, who have been excavating at the site for 11 years now. The excitement surrounding the find is based on the fact that if the initial dating is confirmed, it pushes back European writing by over 100 years. The other interesting fact is that at the time of the writing, the settlement where it was found was a satellite of the city of Pylos, the seat of King Nestor, who was featured in the Iliad. As Mr. Cosmopolios said, this is a rare case where archaeology meets ancient texts and Greek myths. Now, moving to a pressing matter that's slightly closer to my home, the future of a prehistory park hangs in the balance unless further urgent funding can be found. Known as Archaeolink, the park is located at Oyne in Aberdeenshire in Scotland and is a living history and visitor attraction with indoor and outdoor attractions. It covers the Mesolithic, Neolithic, Bronze and Iron Age as well as periods of the Roman occupation. The site has absorbed large subsidies from Aberdeenshire Council but is still running at a loss and is a victim of the council's cost-cutting budget review. Visitor numbers had dropped dramatically and the park needs substantial investment to enable it to continue. John Loveday of the Board of Trustees is quoted as saying that people tend to come to the Archaeolink once and that is it. It has just not worked. There has to be something else to make them come back time and time again. But he doesn't know what that is. Well, I'm afraid news just in is that actually on looking at the park's website at www.archaeolink.co.uk, the park is now closed, having lost that essential funding. Their message reads, the trustees are actively looking into options for its future. So we'll update this as and when we get more information. Hopefully they will have good news, but it's not looking good at the moment. Anyway, on that a sad bit of news, we'll move across to the warmth of South America. Textiles and rope fragments found in a Peruvian cave have been dated to around 12,000 years ago, making them the oldest textiles ever found in South America, according to a report in the April issue of Current Anthropology. The items were originally found 30 years ago in Guatatero Cave high in the Andes. The other artefacts unearthed along with the textiles had been dated to around 12,000 years ago and even older. However, the textiles themselves, believe it or not, had never been dated, and whether they too were that old had been controversial. This is according to Edward Jolie, an archaeologist at Mercyhurst College in Pennsylvania, who led the latest research. By dating the textiles themselves, he was able to confirm their antiquity and refine the timing of the earlier occupation of the Andes Highlands. His team used the latest radiocarbon dating technique, accelerated mass spectrometry, to place the textiles at between 12,100 and 11,080 years ago. The textiles include fragments of woven fabrics, possibly used for bags, baskets, walls or floor coverings or even bedding. They were most likely left by settlers from the lower altitude areas during periodic forays into the mountains. Guatarero Cave's location at a lower elevation is a more temperate environment as compared with the high Andean plain, making it an ideal site for humans to camp and provision themselves for excursions to even higher altitudes. Jolie's research also suggests that women were among these earliest high-altitude explorers. Bundles of processed plant material found in the cave indicate that textile weaving actually occurred on the site. And for those of us choosing to remain on lower ground, on May the 1st, 2011, you can take part in the Sarsen Trail and Neolithic Marathon, a multi-terrain running, walking and mountain biking event, taking you through the Vale of Pusey and Avon Valley, and then across the beautiful ancient landscapes of Salisbury Plain, between Avebury and Stonehenge. Yes, you wondered if we're going to get away with an entire episode without the word Stonehenge mentioned? Well, think again. The races and distances are available for all the family, even the dog. Choose from a full or half marathon, a 7, 11, 15 or 26 mile walk, and a brand new 25 mile circular rough terrain bike route. The entry fees, contributing to the Wiltshire Wildlife Trust conservation work, range from £12 to £30, with children's fees is only £6. The route is fully stewarded in first aid cover and support vehicles. A free coach service is offered for walkers and runners between the starting and finishing points, and regular water and toilet stops with refreshments will be available along the route. Remember, the route may be muddy in wet weather and dusty and rutted when dry, so they ask you to please dress appropriately and ensure you're fit enough to take part. Still time to register? You can do that at www.wiltshirewildlife.org. I'd love to go, but trouble with my knees, I'm afraid. And still in Wiltshire, it's been awarded £58,000 from the Heritage Fund Lottery to work on plans to create new Bronze Age galleries. The galleries are projected to cost more than £200,000. The museum will need to contribute between £20,000 to £30,000 of that. Rich finds from burials in the Stonehenge and Avebury World Heritage sites will be featured in these new galleries, as well as unique golden amber finds that defines the Bronze Age. These artefacts are currently locked away in the museum vaults. The most famous of these finds are the 4,000-year-old ones from Bush Barrow, including a gold lozenge, belt hook, stone mace and richly decorated bronze dagger. The new displays also plan to include objects excavated from Upton Lovell and Manton, as well as the more recent finds from Marden Henge near Devizes. The plans being developed by the Wiltshire Museum will link to the new English Heritage Stonehenge Visitor Centre and galleries planned by the Salisbury and South Wiltshire Museum Service. Museum Director David Dawson exclaimed that the award is fantastic news for them. They'll be able to inspire visitors to the Stonehenge and Avebury World Heritage Site with stories of the people who built and used these iconic monuments. Now, from the peace of the Neolithic and Bronze Age to the violent death of an Iron Age man whose skull and brain were unearthed during excavations at the University of York. He was victim of a gruesome ritual killing, according to new research. Fractures and marks on the bone suggest the man, aged between 26 and 45 years old, died most probably from hanging, after which his head was carefully cut off and buried on its own. Archaeologists from the York Archaeological Trust discovered the solitary skull face down in one of a series of Iron Age pits in 2008 during an exploratory dig before building work began at the campus expansion at Heslington East. The scientists found brain material in the skull, dating back to about 2,500 years, making it one of the oldest surviving brains in Europe. Samples of the brain material had a match DNA sequence found in only a few individuals from Tuscany and the Near East. Carbon dating suggests the remains date from around 6,673 to 4,082 BCE. A multidisciplinary team of scientists was assembled to attempt to establish how the man's brain could have survived when all the other soft tissue had decayed, leaving only the bone. The team is also investigating details of the man's death and burial. The research is published in the Journal of Archaeological Science. Dr. Sonia O'Connor of the University of Bradford in the UK, and the team's head, said that, that's no pun intended, said that it is rare to be able to suggest the cause of death for skeleton human remains of archaeological origin. The preservation of the brain in otherwise skeletonized remains is even more astonishing, although not unique. Now, magic mushrooms seem to have been enjoyed for thousands of years. Prehistoric cave painting in the town of Villar de Humo in east-central Spain may depict fungi with hallucinogenic properties, suggesting that the Europeans may have been using magic mushrooms for 6,000 years ago, the oldest evidence so far for their use in Europe. The image of a bull dominates the Selva Pascula mural, but it is a row of 13 small mushroom-like objects that interest Brian Aker at Pasco Hernando College in Florida. They believe that the objects are the fungi Philoscibi, magic mushrooms, a local species with hallucinogenic properties. Like the objects depicted in the mural, the magic mushrooms have a bell-shaped cap topped with a dome and lacks an annulus, a ring around the stalk. The stalks also vary from straight to sinuous, as exactly they do in the mural. Four dolmens have been discovered in central India now. Archaeologists of the Deccan College Postgraduate and Research Institute have found four dolmens from the Megalithic Age at Shankarpur village, about 150 kilometres from Maharashtra in India. Such burial monuments are mainly found in the southern states of Karnataka and Kerala and are quite rare in Maharashtra. In the Vidarbha region, the common burial types are stone circles, not dolmens. The excavation began last December and the dolmens were excavated just this past March. Of the four excavated dolmens, only one is in good condition. The other three have fallen into ruin. The intact one is being claimed by the team to be the largest in the state. The Deccan College team also found human bones, utensils, four punchmark coins, copper and glass bangles, iron objects and burnt bricks. The long-held theory now that early human ancestors in East Asia crafted their tools from bamboo and wood is much more complicated than originally conceived, according to a new study. Experimental research confirms that it's possible to make a variety of bamboo tools with the simplest stone tools. However, rather than confirming the long-held bamboo hypothesis, the new research shows there's more to the theory. The research does not refute the idea that prehistoric people could have made and used bamboo implements, but instead suggests that upon arriving in East and Southeast Asia, they probably did not start by churning out all of their tools on this bamboo raw material either. The importance of experimental archaeology, replicating the production of bamboo tools with simple stone artifacts, was needed for a long time. Archaeologist and lead author Ofer Bar-Yusuf, professor of Stone Age archaeology at Harvard University, stated they had managed to demonstrate the potential of a simple tool technology to produce many types of tools made from bamboo. Unlike Africa and Western Eurasia, where stone tools show increasing and decreasing complexity, East Asia stone tools remain relatively simple. Stone tool discoveries have been limited to a few hand axes, cleavers and choppers flaked only on one side, indicating a lack of more advanced stone tool making processes, innovation and diversity that is found elsewhere. This lack of complex prehistoric stone tool technology has remained a mystery. Some researchers have concluded that prehistoric people in East Asia must have instead crafted and used tools made from bamboo, a resource that was readily available for them. The authors worked with the Archaeological Field Research Station of the Hunan Province Institute of Archaeology and Cultural Relics in Xiamen, China. The researchers gathered different kinds of cobble-sized rocks and from these rocks easily replicated flint, stone tools and stone choppers. Using the crudely napped stone choppers, the researchers developed a simple bamboo knife reduction sequence that could produce 20 sharp, durable bamboo knives in about 5 hours. Using pork purchased locally from a local market, the researchers write they found that the knives easily cut the meat but not the hide. In other findings, the authors write that from a simple stone unifacial chopper, Bar-Yusuf was able, in 30 minutes, to easily make a sharp spear that would have been capable of killing an animal. Also, using the replicated stone tools, they were able to produce strips of bamboo thin enough for making baskets. Chauhan, the co-editor of the Quaternary International, where the article will be published, said that this unprecedented experimental study by Bar-Yusuf and his colleagues represents the first step in the right direction to confront a long-standing assumption about early human technological adaptations. Archaeologists say they have discovered Saxony's oldest settlement while digging in a farmer's field. in the eastern German state. Archaeologist Harald Stoibele said that the three houses are around 7,500 years old and about 200 years older than any previous examples from the region. Their foundations were found in Salbitz near the city of Leipzig. The houses would have been about 50 to 80 square metres in size, housing families of up to 15 people. Stoibele said archaeologists were led to the spot in 2009 when a local researcher found pieces of ancient ceramics in the field with markings known to be from the Neolithic. The dig started 3 weeks ago and will be finished next week. Now, in New Mexico in the USA, an archaeological team has uncovered a number of tools and a structure they believe was used by an ancient nomadic hunter-gatherer society north of Deming. According to Steve Lentz, project director, for thousands of years, unidentified groups roamed the countryside well before the Mimbres Indians of around 1,000 years ago. The site, which sits on just more than 3 acres, was a rudimentary type of base camp where fires were built. Very little is known about these ancient people other than that they likely travelled in small groups of between 11 to 25 people with some limited agriculture. They basically processed local plants, seeds and grasses. A common method of cooking would have been to heat rocks and then to use these stones to boil water. Evidence of that cooking method was found throughout the area in shards of rock that had broken apart in the heat. The Santa Fe-based group plans to work in the area for another 3 weeks, then return to the lab to perform additional tests and research on the artifacts and finds. The question continues as to what caused the recession on the Bronze Age. A large gap in prehistory could signal that Britain underwent an economic downturn somewhere between 800 and 500 BCE, where experts still struggle to explain exactly what happened. Bronze went into decline, and yet iron was not yet widely used. Historian and presenter Neil Oliver suggests that the Bronze Axe had become almost a proto-currency. It was a wealth that was divorced from its use as metal. However, attitudes towards bronze were about to change with dramatic consequences, not only for Bronze Age elite, but also for the whole of British society. By 800 BCE, Britain, along with the rest of Europe, was heading for an economic meltdown. The difficult thing for historians and archaeologists alike is that no one knows for sure what caused this decline. Explanations range from climate change to environmental destruction caused by over-exploitation or even internal revolution by an overburdened peasantry. There's no generally agreed upon explanation for what looks like a major event, said Timothy Champion, who's the Professor of Archaeology at the University of Southampton. What is known is that around this time the bronze in Britain was beginning to be dumped. But what was the cause of the bronze losing its value? Some suggest it could have been the fault of the impending Iron Age. There's iron in the Mediterranean by around 1200 BCE, said Professor Hamilton, and it became more evident in Italy around 1000 BCE, which is much earlier than was previously thought. But because iron rarely appears in Britain before 600 BCE, many questions whether this could have led to a trickle-down effect. Sir Barry Cunliffe, Emeritus Professor of European Archaeology at University of Oxford, feels that there were major changes in society, but he doesn't think it was because of iron. Recently, scientists have discovered something else interesting about this period, evidence of severe climate change. Results suggest that around the time of the bronze being dumped, there was a sharp decline in temperature and an increase in rainfall. Now, and without this technology to quite literally weather the storm, it's thought that this had dire consequences. As the Bronze Age economy was collapsing, Britain's population also fell for the first time since the Ice Age. By around 550 BCE, it is thought that the decline had ended and the climate had stabilised. Iron began to appear across Britain in increasing quantities. This created a revolution in farming and food production. Iron, unlike bronze, wasn't the preserve of the elite, and that, together with its strength and new widespread availability, was set to transform society and push us one more step into the modern world. Now, did the Neanderthals disappear by chance? Well, popular theory has it that humans displaced Neanderthals due to their superior skills and adaptions. But mathematicians Armando Neves at the Federal University of Minas Gerais in Brazil and Maurizio Serva at the University of Aquila in Italy now say that the extinction of Neanderthals may have come down to a genetic lottery. We know that humans and Neanderthals intermingled during their time together in the Middle East 45,000 years ago. Between 1 to 4% of the DNA of modern non-Africans is actually of Neanderthal origin, implying their ancestors must have interbred before humans moved into Europe. When two populations interbreed, one of them can go extinct simply due to the random mixing of their genes through sexual reproduction. To find out if this could have wiped out the Neanderthals, Neves and Serva modelled the populations that met in the Middle East. Using a very few assumptions, they estimated the rate of interbreeding that could lead to the observed share of Neanderthal DNA. Now, results suggest that the 1 to 4% of genetic mix could have come about with one interbreeding every 10 to 80 generations. The time taken to reach this mix would depend on the size of the population, though. But regardless of the population, their models show that low rates of interbreeding could theoretically have led to the extinction of Neanderthals through genetic lottery. A strong point of the analysis, says anthropologist Luke Primo of the University of Washington, is that it makes very few assumptions about unknown factors, including the relative sizes of the African and Neanderthal populations at the time. Nevertheless, says Primo, the evidence for some kind of superiority of the African group is still strong. Humans were expanding while Neanderthals were fairly restricted to a portion of Eurasia. Given their larger population and expansion, it still appears that humans were just bound to win in the end. Now, sewer construction workers have found human remains that could be 7,000 years old. This is in Ohio, USA. The remains were discovered in January and were found near a site where scientists think people harvested, cooked and ate clams thousands of years ago. State archaeologist John Dorshuk said that it's a rather unique site, not only in Iowa but in fact the Midwest. The site's exact location is not being disclosed to protect it from looters. The discovery, an archaeological dig, is delaying the sewer project now for at least 6 months. It seems that rising seas made China's ancient people mariners. At a time when rice farming dominated in other regions, the inundation of the Fuzhou Basin in southeast China, starting around about 9,000 years ago, led to the creation of a maritime culture that eventually took to the seas. So says a team led by archaeologist Barry Rollett of the University of Hawaii in Honolulu. Analysis of sediment cores extracted from the Fuzhou Basin indicate that at the time, the kind of marshy areas that are needed for rice paddies disappeared under rising waters. Locals built outposts of newly minted islands starting around 5,500 years ago and honed their nautical skills, probably using wooden canoes or bamboo rafts to obtain fish and other aquatic food in a new vast estuary. Rollett and his colleagues report all this in the April Quaternary Science Review. A largely rice-free maritime lifestyle eventually enabled sea voyages of 130 kilometres to Taiwan, he proposes. His team analysed the four Fuzhou Basin sediment cores, including two extracted from marshes near a pair of ancient settlements. Work at the site had produced artefacts from the Neolithic culture that's been dated to between 5,000 to 4,300 years ago. His findings challenge a popular scientific view that a transition to village life in northern China around 8,000 years ago triggered rice-fueled population growth and spread southward. In that scenario, shortages of marshy land suitable for rice paddies motivated sea crossings to Taiwan, possibly originating in the Yangtze Delta, where researchers have found a 7,500-year-old canoe and three wooden paddles. Rollett's evidence that fishing and seafaring dwarfed rice growing in a submerged section of southeast China, possibly then prompting Taiwan's colonization, is quite plausible, commented another archaeologist, Robert Bettinger, of the University of California. villages from around 5,000 years ago in Fuzhou Basin and on Taiwan contain similar types of pottery, supporting Rollett's arguments. Seafaring prompted by ancient flooding may have been crucial for colonisation of islands beyond Taiwan as well. Many linguists think that ancestral populations of the Austronesian languages speakers now inhabiting Southeast Asian and Pacific islands from Philippines to Fiji came from Taiwan. Now, off the north coast of Wales, new excavations have recently been carried out by the Welsh Rock Art Association, our dear friends, I have to say, on a piece of megalithic rock art known as the Llynderth Isgob Farmstone. The farm in question is located on the island of Anglesey. The stone is believed to have been moved to its current location at the beginning of the 20th century by the renowned antiquary Thomas Pritchard. The farm is set in an area with several standing stones and a possible Neolithic chambered tomb, all of which are on northwest-southeast alignment. Several Neolithic axes and axe hammers have also been found in the area, originating from as far away as Cumbria in northern England. All of this evidence leads the team to believe that this is an early Bronze Age site of some significance. While Wales is considered less important in terms of rock art regions compared to the rest of Europe, this piece has significant and unique decoration. The stone is made from a distinctive localised hornblende picrite, which, from the way the designs extend to the bottom edge, means that the fragment of a much larger stone. The artwork takes the form of three concentric circles, cup and rings, cupules and intersecting grooves. Differing techniques were employed to record the markings, making several tracings on photography, for example using artificial light sources at different angles. A final image was produced using computer graphics. Analysis of the concentric circles and the depth and width of the grooves lead the team to believe that two, not one, artist produced the circles with different tools and perhaps at different times. At the conclusion of their investigations, the team was left with several unanswered questions. Principally, what designs does the missing section have, and what was the orientation of the fragment that they do not have? The final unanswered question is, what was its function? The experts can only speculate that it may have formed part of the entrance of a nearby chambered tomb. One thing, however, is certain, that although resembling other patterns found on both sides of the Irish Sea, the design of the Isgob stone is unique. And you can read the full article on that currently in the article section, surprisingly enough, of Past Horizons. That's www.pasthorizons.com, where you can also keep up to date with news from around the world. Don't forget, of course, that this news is available on the iPhone, iPod, Touch and iPad. So get yourself along to www.stonepages.com/app. Can I remind people that many new archaeological and heritage employment opportunities, as well as a whole lot more, can be found on Badger, B-A-J-R, www.bajr.org. And more can, of course, be found on Stone Pages, news.stonepages.com. Well, thank you for listening to Archaeology News Weekly. We hope you'll return once more to us next week.